everyone, and welcome to the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I am Senior Consultant Lauren Williams, and I have a really cool show for you today. So it's been quite a while since we've done any case studies or interviews from real live people with real live student loans, but that's what I've got for you today. PSLF is all the rage right now, but it is not for everyone. So we've been talking lots and lots the last few weeks, months, actually even almost years at this point, about the public service loan forgiveness waiver, about the income-driven repayment waiver, about the tons and tons of different updates that are constantly happening related to student loans because this landscape is ever-changing. But what if you didn't qualify for PSLF? What if you never plan to qualify for public service loan forgiveness? You're an entrepreneur out there, or you have a career path that doesn't operate within the nonprofit or government sector. You're like, you guys have been doing a lot of content on this, but what about me? Never fear. We have something for you today, because some career paths make it easy to pursue public service loan forgiveness. Some don't. But what if it's just like, this doesn't fit within my values and what it is that I actually want for myself? You don't have to do public service loan forgiveness, even if it is available to you. And it is the most cost-effective thing. It is all about making decisions that are right for you and your family. And so without further ado, I'm excited to introduce someone who is living just what I described. A public service loan forgiveness profession, but choosing to go a different route because it is perfect for her family, their values, and what they're trying to achieve financially. Miranda, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here.
Well, why don't we get the party started by just sharing a little bit of information about you? So just tell us where you're from, kind of how you grew up, and then a little bit about like your family now and where these student loans came from.
Yeah, so I am in mid-Michigan. I have been here most of my life, lived in South Carolina for a little bit, but I came back and met my husband. We have three kids now, 1, 3, and 5 years old. So we are extremely busy. We are both physical therapists, actually. And when we got married, I was still in school and my husband just started his first job. I was eligible for PLSF and he was not, but he found a job in a hospital system. So that was kind of our plan after our first kid, still going strong with the plan for PSLF. And after our second baby was born, she had a lot of health concerns and daycare was just not working out for us. So for, oh gosh, it was probably 7 months, we made it work without childcare and him working full time and me working half time. Yes, it was wild. His schedule was a little bit more flexible and I dropped down to part-time, making me ineligible for the loan forgiveness, but I loved my job. I loved where I worked. And then March 2020 came and I took a leave. I'm a physical therapist and I specialize in a lot of pelvic floor health. So that was deemed non-essential. So all of my caseload just vanished. And I was happy to be home with my children. It was really a blessing, not necessarily what we had planned. And after being home with them and having my husband actually getting to work, not at 11 o'clock at night, he was like, I just don't think we can go back there. So I took a different job working very part-time and it just was not the best fit. Kind of like you mentioned for values, I really value like peace, harmony, and that job was not giving me that in my life. So I decided to start my own business, which was a leap of faith, but it's working out really well. It's been maybe 6 months and it's been fantastic, but now I'm not eligible for loan forgiveness. So trying to figure out, in a couple of years, it really dramatically changed our game plan. I think this year I would have been 8 years into the program for loan forgiveness. And now what do we do?
And someone's going, I can't believe it. You gave up public service loan forgiveness. But there's someone else on the other end that's listening to this podcast right now and saying, oh my goodness, this is so refreshing. I can do it too. Tell me more. Hopefully I can do it too. Tell me more. So first I want to circle back to talking a little bit about the pandemic, because I think that is a time period that turns so many of us on our heads. You know, we made big life changes as a result of it. And so it sounds like you said like childcare just wasn't an option a lot of times for people. Can you talk about what your pandemic experience was and kind of what has prompted some of those changes?
I was working for quite a while. I think I stopped working in maybe June or July. Like, I was working for a while, kind of as the pandemic was ramping up and people, you know, no one knew what was going on. Same for my husband. But then we both stopped working and we were off at the same time, which was scary financially to not know when or if we were going back. What was the deal? We had always intended to go back, but there was a lot of question marks, I think. And I stayed home with the kids. He went back to work and I chatted with my boss multiple times, just the demands of his job increased significantly just with people being off. He travels. Actually, he's a home care PT. So he travels a lot and his days were getting longer and longer and longer, which meant our situation of me working from like 6:30 to 2 and then him working from 3 to, you know, whenever he was not feasible anymore.
Yeah, that must have been really tough. You said it's basically like ships passing in the night. It was like, okay, I'm going to take the morning shift. You're going to take the night shift. And also there's no off time because we're flip-flopping and taking care of our children in between this period. And I feel like a lot of people, what I've heard a lot of is that, you know, during that pandemic time, they really enjoyed being home with their children. They really liked the idea of like being able to spend time and impact the way that your child is going to grow up in a more up close and personal way, if you will, as opposed to parenting after school, before school. So there's a lot of people who have decided post pandemic not to return to the workforce in a way that is not going to allow them to spend as much time with their children as they would like to. So I think that's really, really cool. All right, let's talk a little bit about student loans and where we are. So I know at Student Loan Planner, our average student loans for PTs is about $187,000. How much student loan debt do you and your husband have?
I mean, you're pretty right on. I right now have just a little over $180,000 and my husband has $173,000. We actually paid off a substantial portion in all of his private loans. We've paid off in the last few years. That was one of our goals. So his was higher. But yeah, you're right on.
Yeah. And one of the things that a lot of people don't realize is that the private loans, there's no forgiveness coming down the pipeline for the private loans. So a lot of people have been hanging on, you know, lately because of COVID and President Joe Biden's various announcements, but private loans are not eligible for any sort of forgiveness. They're outside of the federal system. And so with your federal loans, you have a lot of different options. With your private loans, it is to pay them off. So it's great that you guys took the initiative to start paying those loans down and to be thinking about like what plan you can create based on roughly about $300,000 of student loan debt between the two of you, while one is pursuing public service loan forgiveness and you're not going to be pursuing it anymore. All right. So let's talk a little bit about like income. I see adjusted gross income around 110K last year.
Right.
All right. So let's jump into talking about what options you have for your federal student loan debt. Up to this point, have you all kind of created a plan on your own and been thinking about like what's the best course of action? What are you thinking is going to be the most cost-effective thing?
So he is, I think, just about 3 years away from his 10-year mark. So hopefully going for forgiveness, he's consolidated. He is applying for the waiver program, but I think everything is set to go. So I think his are pretty straightforward. My loans, however, it's, you know, like I said, a dramatic difference from 3 years ago to now. And it's kind of left us floundering with what to do. The student loan pause has been a huge blessing for us. My income has dramatically decreased. Like I said, I work on my own now, but we still don't have childcare. So I see, you know, maybe 3 people a week. I'm not making much money.
All right. And so you're trying to build the business. You have goals and aspirations of building this business to back to, you know, what was the similar full-time salary you had previously? Or what are your overall goals on your business?
Our plan is I'm going to stay home with the kids until they are in full school full time, and then I will plan to ramp up. So our littlest just turned 1. So we have a couple of years of this in between time. But then, yeah, hopefully I will work up to a full time caseload. But that's several years away.
All right, perfect. So let's think this through a little bit. You shared with me an income of 110K last year, adjusted gross income. So one of the things that's important as we think about the various forgiveness options is that when you're on an income-driven repayment plan, they're always going to calculate your payment based on your adjusted gross income. So one of the things that you all can do is be putting money into a pre-tax retirement account in order to save for retirement, because we all want to retire someday, but then also to be lowering your adjusted gross income. Do you feel like you guys are in a position to be able to save for retirement in addition to, you know, take care of the regular household expenses, despite the fact that your income is less than it previously was?
Yeah, that's actually one of our goals this year, this calendar year. We like to make goals at the beginning of the year, and I feel like we've kind of been in limbo up until this point. So we're really making an effort to save for retirement, so we are set to go when we actually want to retire.
Yes, it's such an important piece of the puzzle. So frequently people come and they're just like, oh my goodness, these student loans are wearing me out. I have no idea how I'm ever going to be able to retire, how I'm ever going to be able to buy a home, ever going to be able to pay for my kids' college, and the list goes on. But my message to people that I work with is that there's no need to put these at the forefront of your financial life. It's important that you create a plan for them and that they fit into your overall financial life, because ultimately you want to be building a life that's based on your goals, your vision, your values for your family, and using money as a tool to be able to do that. These student loans don't have to stop you.
Right. Absolutely.
All right. So we're going to be home for the next 4 years. So income for you out of that 110, you said was about 11,000. And so if we kind of slowly ramp up over the next 4 years, you know, let's say we have a 3% increase in income, just kind of keeping up with inflation, a slow but steady, but not any big jumps. I have you at about maybe 13,000 by the time your youngest child goes off to school full time.
That sounds right. Yeah.
And then your spouse, you said 101. So tell me a little bit, you know, usually when you're in a public service job, there's not usually big raises. Is it like standard 3% raises? Is it a government job where it's even like just 2% raises? Or how does it work for your spouse?
Historically, it's been 3% for him.
Okay.
Every year.
Perfect. So smooth, straight to the point. So we've got about 3 years left of public service loan forgiveness, and then presto changeo, his loans go away, which is going to be awesome. But then that's just going to leave you behind to kind of continue to take care of your loans. And then there's going to be two household incomes, and hopefully household income goes up. Do you have like a goal salary for once you kind of start to ramp things up?
You know, I haven't given a salary number, because it seems so far in the distant future. I think that's why I have not made a goal for that yet.
Fair enough. All right. So we'll kind of proceed. It's maybe, what was your previous salary?
Oh, 75, I think 75,000.
Okay. And you think that would be a realistic amount that you could earn based on running your own business? Or do you feel like that would be a way above and beyond with capacity wise, which you might be able to handle?
I think I could get there quite easily. Yeah.
All right. So let's take you back to your 75,000 as a conservative way to be able to estimate what your income looks like. So what we can do here is think about, well, over the next few years, how should we approach our student loans? Well, because both of you have student loans, Mary filing separately is going to make not as much sense as it would for some people that have either big differences in the amount that they owe or big differences in the amount of income. So there is a big difference in the amount of income that you earn. But when you think about it overall, both of you have student loans and they're going to be contributing to each of your student loans on a monthly basis. So I don't think that Mary filing separately is something that we're going to have to take a look at. But, you know, we don't want to rule it out per se, because it is going to be something that comes into play when your husband gets forgiveness. So when we think about forgiveness, long-term forgiveness is what we're going to be going for. So one question I have for you is, when did you borrow your student loans? When did you first take out student loans?
2007, I started undergrad. In 2011, I started graduate school.
Ah, so you are one of these people on the bubble. So if you borrowed before October 1st of 2007, you're not going to be eligible for a program that's called Pay As You Earn. Do you know what income-driven plan you're currently on?
Whichever one is the PLSF, because I haven't paid since then, I don't think.
Since 2019, when everything went on hold.
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah, so this is a great time to talk about the various programs that exist. So there is the Pay-As-You-Earn plan, which is for borrowers who borrowed after October 1st of 2007 exclusively. So if you had any loans in 06, 05, any time prior to October 1st of 2007, and you had not paid them off in their entirety before borrowing in October 1st of 2007, then you wouldn't be eligible for the Pay-As-You-Earn program. There's another program called Revised Pay-As-You-Earn. Revised Pay-As-You-Earn is going to be for everyone who has direct loans, and it's going to be based on you paying on the loans for a period of 25 years instead of 20 years. So Pay-As-You-Earn is going to be 20 years. Revised Pay-As-You-Earn is 25. Sounds like you might be eligible for Pay-As-You-Earn. And so we want to look into that because it's going to be important to know whether you are on Revised Pay-As-You-Earn or Pay-As-You-Earn, because you don't want to pay for 5 years longer if we don't have to, right?
Right. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, key piece of the puzzle that we want to get to the bottom of. And then there's one other income-driven repayment plan. It's called income-based repayment. And so that's going to be kind of your backup plan if you're not eligible for Pay-As-You-Earn. So like I said, right, because you're on the bubble, you may not be eligible for Pay-As-You-Earn. In the short term, what we can do is you can get on the revised Pay-As-You-Earn plan because it's calculating based on 10% of your household discretionary income. And so based on that adjusted gross income that you provided, I'm seeing a payment of about $538 for you and your spouse next year. And I think you gave me some numbers that were pretty similar to that when you were sharing before about what you were paying. Is it around $500 between the two of you?
Yes. I think we're at $343 and $243.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So $580. Yeah. About $590. So yeah, we're right on tack. So actually it's going to go down a little bit. So something has happened over the last few years. Actually, you had a kid. That's yes. Probably why it's going down slightly. So when you use that adjusted gross income, you know, to calculate a payment, it says, hey, here's your payment based on your family size, based on your adjusted gross income. And then you can choose a payment plan that's going to be either 10 or 15% of your discretionary income. All right. So we know you might be eligible for Pay-As-You-Earn. Revised Pay-As-You-Earn is a good backup plan, at least for the next 3 years. And then the last program we need to talk about is income-based repayment. So if for some reason you're not eligible for Pay-As-You-Earn, you're going to want to look at income-based repayment. And the reason is because it allows you to do married filing separately. Well, why should I do married filing separately, Lauren? You just told me we both have loans. There's not really a reason for it. Well, after your husband gets student loan forgiveness, we don't want $110,000 of income being included in your overall student loan calculation every month or every year when they calculate your payment. We'd much rather have just your income, whether that's the $75,000 or if it's still, you know, $12,000 or $13,000 as you continue to ramp up over time. Would you rather pay a payment based on $110,000 of income or $175,000 of income or just $75,000 of income?
Yeah, no brainer, $75,000.
Exactly. And so if we were to look at your full payment at the point at which you went back to work and you were earning that $75,000, we're talking about $1,100 a month payment. But if I don't want an $1,100 a month payment, instead I want to do married filing separately, a payment now is looking at about $168. Even if you choose the income-based repayment, we're talking about $252. So much, much different. Why would I give the federal government $900 of my money each month paying toward my student loans if I could continue to do married filing separately? And at the end of it all, there'd be a forgiveness at the end.
Yeah, that's wild, the difference.
Yeah. So a lot of people say like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that, you know, I would just be giving $900 away. And they're really caught off guard because they don't realize that your student loans are calculated based on your adjusted gross income, which is based on your tax return, which is based on your tax filing status. So married filing separately is going to become relevant for you all. It's just not relevant right now in this particular moment. All right. So before we continue to build your student loan plan, I want to talk a little bit about goals because, you know, this episode is all about building a financial plan that is based on your vision, your values, and your goals for yourself. So one of the things that you said is like, I'm okay giving up public service loan forgiveness. I just need to know what my options are. So what are some of the goals and visions and values that you have for your family, whether that's education for your children or retirement or moving to a different place? Can you share with us a little bit more about your overall values and visions for yourself?
Yes, as far as working, I know my husband wants to retire as soon as he can. at least maybe not keep the same job. I think it's a wearing job. As far as me, I love my career, and I definitely can see in the future where I expand my practice to add other clinicians. So as I get older, maybe I'm not the one doing the direct patient care all of the time. We definitely like to travel, and it's a goal for us to help contribute for our children's education.
Excellent. So travel, education, retire as soon as possible.
All of it.
Do all the things. Do you feel like a $252 student loan payment would be well within the range that would be able to allow you to save for your kids' education and put some money away and go on a cool trip every year?
Right. Absolutely. That's reasonable.
And what about an $1,100 payment if you had to make that on a monthly basis? Which of those goals would kind of fall to the bottom of the priority list?
Yeah, we're going to be camping in our backyard, I think, at that point.
Yeah, it does make things quite a bit harder if you're having to calculate based on two incomes. So, all right, let's talk a little bit more about, like you said, how this looks then. All right, so we're thinking that you're going to work for 4 more years in a lesser capacity, and then you're going to start to ramp up. And that 3 years from now, your husband's going to get public service loan forgiveness. So 3 years from now, his student loans completely disappear. And then we just have your loans to worry about. One other piece of the puzzle to make sure that we're mapping out the best plan for you is to look at when you borrowed your loans, but also when you started to repay the loans. So when did you join an income-driven repayment plan? When did you get out of school? Did you get the 6-month grace period? Can you walk us through like what that process looked like?
Yes, I did get the 6-month grace period. I was done with school, I think it was May or June of 2014. And I started working in July of 2014. And then I started paying 6 months after that.
Gotcha. So it was basically 2015 before you started paying on the loans. And in 2015, you immediately signed up for an income-driven repayment plan. There's a lot of times where people are not really sure what payment plan to sign up for. What was that process like for you when you were trying to get on your first payment plan?
I knew my employer was eligible for the loan forgiveness through the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. So I signed up, consolidated my loans. I was good to go. I had a game plan. And man, life does not always follow your plan.
Life definitely never goes as planned, but it is good to have a plan because then you can pivot versus like being totally thrown off track and having to kind of refigure out a whole plan from scratch. So, and what was your knowledge level like initially when you were trying to figure that? So you knew public service loan forgiveness was a thing. You knew your employer was eligible, but was there like a process? Like, how did you figure out like what the criteria was? And were you just reading blogs like Student Loan Planner? Did we help you do that?
You know, I honestly can't even remember. I don't know who told me. I just was like following the steps. This is what you do. I'm in an eligible employer. Cool. Loan forgiveness. And so it really was not part of our financial plan to include long-term retirement and loans because we just thought that we would not have any loans anymore.
Yeah, you're just like, in 10 years, we don't have to worry about this. But now we're kind of readjusting that plan. And it's probably that it's going to be more like 20 to 25 years before you don't have to worry about this. So let's talk a little bit about what that could look like for you. If we're going to choose the pay-as-you-earn plan, if you're eligible for pay-as-you-earn, and you've started paying on the loans in 2015, we're now in 2022. So we're about 7 years into a 20-year plan. And so what it looks like for you if you're going to go is like 13 more years to go until you're done and you get what we call taxable forgiveness. So assuming that we get your income back up to $75,000 and you continue to pay based on your income, you do married filing separately. As we discussed, after your spouse gets public service loan forgiveness, we're looking at about $20,000 that you're going to pay on this $180,000 student loan balance. How do you feel about that? Paying $20,000 of a $180,000 balance. You feel like that's even? That's a good number?
Oh, man. Like what? I feel like a relief. $20,000 you can slowly save over time, right? I mean, unless you have just $20,000 in the bank, I guess, that you want to pay for that. But I feel like that is a financial goal. You can stash away some money and be able to pay that without really much of an issue.
So $20,000 is what you're going to pay over the next 15 years while we're working toward public service loan forgiveness, or 13 years you have until public service loan forgiveness. Now, the good news is that at the end, they're going to forgive the rest of whatever is left over, which is about $313,000, which people are like, what? That's crazy. I have a $180,000 balance right now. It's going to grow to 313. It makes people very uncomfortable sometimes. But this is the way those programs work. Love them or hate them, interest is what it is, and it's going to continue to make your loan balance grow. However, paying $20,000 out of pocket when you actually owe $180,000 is very affordable and can help you reach some of those goals you were talking about with your family.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. So we do need to talk about that tax liability and what that looks like. So $313,000 is what's left over. The government says, hey, you paid based on your income, on your ability to pay. Thank you for doing so. We appreciate that. You still owe us $313,000, but we're going to forgive that. Don't worry. No big deal. You don't have to pay it. However, we're also going to send you a 1099 in the mail and say you earned $313,000 extra dollars in that year. And so in addition to your regular income in 2035, when these loans get forgiven, you're going to get a tax liability of $125,000. How do you feel about $125,000 tax liability?
I mean, that's hefty. but I think if you, I don't know, I'll have to make a plan for that. That's a big tax bill at the end of the year.
Yeah. And I think it's really frustrating for people. They hear these numbers and they just want to like crawl into a hole. And they're like, oh my goodness, I can't do it. I don't want to do it. But how do you eat an elephant? I would say one bite at a time, right?
Right. Yeah.
You've got 13 years to prepare for this tax liability. And so we do this math for our clients, and it's about $629 that you need to save on a monthly basis in order to get ready for the tax liability. So instead of focusing on the $125,000 that you're going to owe, much more affordable is like, okay, $600 on a monthly basis. If I set that aside, throw it in an investment account. So we don't want to put it in a savings account, even though interest rates are coming back up. They're not good enough, like, to where we've got 13 years. That's kind of a long-term time frame. I think you can put that money in an investment account and let that money grow. So $629, can you work that into your budget in addition to the $200 payment?
We're going to have to, right? I think that's going to, we'll have to sit down and prioritize what's important to us. I think that's one of the challenges with our daughter, with her health concerns. We don't really have a choice of right now what we do. So we're going to have to make it work.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a really good point about like conflicting priorities and prioritizing based on the things that are most important to you. There's a lot of people that are just like, it's not fair that someone should only pay $20,000 if they borrowed $180,000. But I think as people are listening today, they realize like, you know, this is a family with three kids and one of your children has some health issues, and how expensive, if anybody's on the other end has had any health issues, how expensive healthcare is. Making sure that you can take as good of care of your children as possible. And so why not be able to pay something affordable on a monthly basis towards your student loans, be able to properly take care of your children, be able to save for retirement? Why should anybody be not afforded that opportunity? And this is a really cool way that these programs exist. You know, they're not perfect, but they're also, you know, making it at least feasible for people to be able to pay something on a monthly basis, return the debt that they borrowed, and also, like you said, take care of their family. So $629 sounds like you, they said you can work it out.
Yeah.
All right. Now, there is one other thing we have to talk about, and it's the income-based repayment plan, because you might not be eligible for pay as you earn. So if we have to go income-based because you borrowed before October 1st of 2007, it's going to be a slightly higher number. So pay-as-you-earn was giving us $20,000 that you pay over the next 13 years. Income-based repayment is going to be about $51,000. The reason that the number is higher is that it's a 25-year plan, so not a 20-year. So instead of being done in 2035, you'll be done in 2040. And it's also basing your payment based on 15% of your income instead of 10% of your income. So if you remember when I was talking about pay as you earn, I was telling you the payment would be around $168 a month when you get up to earning that $75,000 a year. with the income-based repayment, it's going to be around $252. So worst case scenario is $252 plus saving the $629. Between the two, it's about $900 a month that you would need to come up with from a student loan perspective overall. You think you can swing that? Yeah.
It changes how we use our money, but yes.
Yes, you can. All right, perfect. And so income-based repayment or pay-as-you-earn, but in the short term, you know, what is the best option? You can either be on pay-as-you-earn if you're eligible for it, or revise pay-as-you-earn. Why does revise pay-as-you-earn work right now? It's because both you and your spouse have student loans. And so when we think about this, what they do is they divide proportionally your student loan payment on a monthly basis. So let's say that they come up with a $1,000 a month payment. Who has the most amount of loans would get most of the $1,000 toward it, and the other person would get the remaining amount put toward their loans. You guys are about 50-50. So in an example where there's a $1,000 payment, about 500 or maybe about 550 or 560 would go toward yours, and the rest would go toward your spouse's loans. But what kind of payment are we looking at right now? We're talking about a $538 payment. So we're much, much less than that. This is more like a consideration, the $1,000, when you get to a point where there's going to be, like I said, two household incomes again, and we need to start doing the Mary filing separately to keep the payment low.
Got it.
Tell me some of your thoughts as you're listening to all of this information. This is the path that I'm choosing, and it sounds good. It doesn't sound good. Like, what's going through your mind right now?
You know, it's definitely a lot to absorb. And like I said, 3 years ago, our loans were not really something we had conversations about. So it's something we're talking about more and more. And as payments are starting back up, hopefully soon in January, I think it will impact. We've had a whole human since the pandemic started. And our second born was just a baby when the pandemic started. So our lives are just really different right now from even 3 years ago, when I was, you know, still eligible for the loan forgiveness. So it definitely impacts how we plan our future and how we plan our life as far as, like you said, trips, the housing situation, do we remodel our kitchen? So it sounds overwhelming. However, I think with a solid plan and some really good advice, it's manageable. And for getting a loan when you're 18 years old for a lot of money and not really having the financial literacy to understand the impacts of how that will, you know, dictate choices I make for the rest of my life, I think having a solid game plan can be helpful.
Yeah, I think you make a lot of good points there. So one, it is sitting down and creating a plan. Because having the luxury to not look at the student loans was based on, well, public service loan forgiveness is just around the corner. But now it's like, okay, well, public service loan forgiveness is not just around the corner. These loans are going to be sticking around for a bit longer than we expected, but they don't have to ruin our life. And not to feel any regret, you know, you mentioned, like you said, what you didn't know. So many people reach out and they're just like, I had no idea what I was signing on the dotted line for. I did not understand what debt was, what student loans were, what was a grant versus what was being, you know, given to me versus I was going to have to pay this back later. I had no idea what I was going to be earning on the other end of this. And I think that's the real travesty of our educational system, is that they're not providing proper literacy or proper education before we take on the student loan debt. And then even after we've taken on the debt, you know, what opportunities are there for us to earn? You know, as physical therapists, you guys do have good earning potential, but there's like lots of different paths that you can take as well. So not to feel any regret about the path that you've chosen, and also to just feel really excited and grateful for like the opportunities that come as a result of being able to do the work that you've mentioned so often during this podcast that you love.
Right. I do.
Yeah. These have afforded you an opportunity to do something that's really cool, help a lot of people. Especially, like you said, if there's anyone listening that has pelvic floor issues, like they're like, yeah, thanks, Miranda. Like,
yeah, life-changing for a lot of the people I work with.
Yeah. And I mean, even in that same vein, you know, there's also a ways to earn additional income. So I know you said you're not able to work full-time, but, you know, you've also started kind of a side hustle. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your plan for, you know, building your side hustle and, you know, how that came about as part of your financial story?
Yeah. So being home with the kids for the last, you know, couple of years, 3 years, essentially, I do a lot of activities and crafts with them. And I would share with all of my friends, like on Snapchat. And they would always say, you should start a blog. So finally, I did. I felt like, hey, if it earns us a couple of extra dollars a month, that might be helpful in the short term. So we have a blog. My kids are on my little models. They do the activities. So we post our ideas on Instagram, and I have a blog that people follow. So we'll see. It's brand new. So we will hopefully be successful. And it's been fun, at the very least.
I feel like this is a really cool thing, too, is as we talk about living within your values, you know, you're doing something with your children, which also gives them an opportunity to be educated about the value of putting in some sort of work in order to earn some sort of living. So if it starts to earn, or when it starts to earn, you know, to be able to have those conversations with your children about, this is our work we're doing together as a family, and this is how it's going to help us as a family, is a cool thing. But then also just like the fun part of it, like actually doing it with the kids.
Right. Yeah. We were doing it anyway. So now I just take more pictures of it.
Right. Exactly. Capturing it to share with others, and potentially it becoming an additional income source to help you all be able to reach your financial goals.
Yes.
All right. So if we summarize what we've learned today, you all are married. Your husband is 3 years away from public service loan forgiveness. Well, we don't know what plan he's on. That was one thing we didn't cover. Do you know if he is also on revised pay as you earn, or pay as you earn, or he's on a income driven plan?
It just, when I looked it up just briefly, it said income based. So whatever that means.
Okay. So we want to double check. Your homework item is to go and find out what payment plan each of you is on. Four requirements for public service loan forgiveness. The first one is that you have direct loans. The second one is that you work at a qualified employer. The third one is that you are on an income-driven repayment plan. So income-driven is the name of the program. Underneath that umbrella, you have four different options to choose from. Income-based, which we talked about today, revised pay as you earn, pay as you earn, and income contingent, which is pretty much almost never right for anyone. There's very, very few situations. So we don't spend a lot of time talking about that. There's very, very unique situations where income contingent might be a relevant program. So your homework is to find out which one of those programs you're on. Right now, based on the situation, you and your husband should both be on revised pay as you earn, or you could both be on pay as you earn. Either one will be fine. If you're not eligible for pay as you earn, then you definitely want to be on revised pay as you earn. That's going to give you the lowest student loan payment possible. If you're not eligible for pay as you earn, when your husband gets forgiveness in 3 years, you're going to want to start doing married filing separately, and you're going to want to switch to income-based repayment.
Got it.
And then the other big piece of the puzzle is to start preparing for the tax liability. You are either 13 or 18 years away from your forgiveness. You have a new type of forgiveness that is coming down the pipeline for you. It is going to take a little bit longer. It is going to result in you paying a little bit more than you would have if you were on public service loan forgiveness. But this does not have to set your family's path, you know, into financial turmoil, or it doesn't have to be a big decision that you totally regret. Like, public service is not for everyone. It sounds like you're having a blast at home with your children. You're doing work that you love. And so I don't recommend that you go back to public service loan forgiveness unless you feel like that's right for your family. There's definitely an affordable and a really cool path in the form of the 13 or 18 years until you get forgiveness, and then you pay that tax liability. Either way, $180,000 is not going to have to come out of your pocket. $180,000 plus interest is not going to have to come out of your pocket. It's going to be much less than that, and a much more affordable amount based on what your family can afford.
Awesome.
How are you feeling?
Yeah, I think doable. It's a lot, but it's doable.
What questions do you have as you kind of think through some of the things that we've talked about today?
I think you answered a lot of my questions. We were tossing around the idea, like, should we file taxes separately? What does that look like? How does that look like me going, ramping up when the kids are in school? We're not 100% sure if we're having any more children or not. So just kind of, what does the future hold for us, and how do these loans impact the decisions that we make, and how do our decisions impact our loans? So I think you answered a lot of the questions that I had.
I think it's all about, like you said, setting your priorities and continuing to have conversations. The most damaging thing that I see is people sticking their head in the sand and pretending like these loans don't exist, or refusing to talk about them with their spouse. That is a key piece of the puzzle, doing a weekly or monthly family financial planning meeting and saying, like, what's our plan now? What are our priorities now? Are things changing? Priority one, children's health. Priority two, retirement. Priority three, children's education. You know, I'm throwing those out there. They may not be the order for you, but whatever that order is, and making sure that your dollars are aligning with whatever those values are and that you're able to take care of those things and say, okay, these other five things at the bottom are not that important to us, or they're not important to us at all. You know, some people really, really love to eat out, or they really, really love, you know, pizza night Fridays because that's the way they spend time with their family. They're never going to give that up. And it's totally fine to not give that one thing up if that's important to your family. But it may also be that we eat out way too much for convenience and we need to lower our eating out budget so that we can have more money to put into our retirement, keep our AGI low, and make the most of our student loan plan. So totally up to you, but it's a conversation that definitely always needs to be happening on a regular and evolving basis.
Yeah, we have we call it a business meeting every week on Sunday nights. So we're there.
All right. We hope that we have proved to someone out there today who has been, you know, pondering back and forth, thinking about public service loan forgiveness. You know, some friend has already shamed you for giving it up. It is all about making a plan that is right for you, your family, your vision, your goals, and your values for yourself. There are lots of different ways to pay your student loans off. There's lots of different things that you could be doing. If you've paid on your loans during the pandemic and you were listening to this and you are similar in a similar situation to Miranda, like, go get your money back. Get a refund for any money that you've paid towards your student loans since March 13th of 2020. You can absolutely do that. Miranda, did you make any payments since COVID started?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Great. Good job. Never fear, though. If you're one of the people who did, you can still get a refund. And time is becoming of the essence because, like I said, lots of these windows are closing. The public service loan forgiveness waiver, if you're eligible for it, your paperwork needs to be in by October 31st of this year. We're expecting student loan payments to pick back up in January of 2023. Income-driven repayment waiver. If you had all kinds of weird payments and forbearances and deferments, that waiver payments will start to get counted this fall. There's a lot happening in the student loan world. Time to make a plan for yourself. Time to get your things in order. Time to understand where you stand and what is the best thing for you. Because what's right for Miranda may not be right for you. And what's right for you may not be right for Miranda. But each and every one of us has to take control of our personal finances and pull our head, kind of like I said, out of the dirt and deal with it. So this has been another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Miranda, do you have anything you want to say as we wrap it up?
I really appreciate your time. And I think what the podcast is doing and the blog is doing, that you guys are putting the information out there that really can be helpful. People, I think, are floundering, and you shed some light and I think give a lot of hope to people. So thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you so much for sharing your story so transparently. I know someone in this audience is going to be helped by it. If you have any questions or you need any help, don't hesitate to reach out to us at studentloanplanner.com.